Now, moving on to another more infamous hoax that you've investigated pretty heavily on your website and that has become pretty big news this spring is the alien autopsy film hoax that was even probably even more famous than the Dr. Reed story, because the alien autopsy story made it to mainstream America. It's almost now it's almost like a joke in mainstream America now, alien autopsy movie. So tell me a little bit about your investigation of the alien autopsy film and what you think of what's going on now with regards to Ray Santilli and this UK film. I'm not entirely familiar with it, so you know more about it than I do.
I've actually seen the special you're talking about.
Okay.
And I really haven't investigated it per se. There's a gentleman named Mark Sinner who runs a website called Beyond Roswell. It's one of the best sources of information for alien autopsy film information.
Mm-hmm.
And he has really done a lot of investigating on this film from start to finish. It's got a great website with a lot of good information on it. So I haven't investigated this per se. When I first got into UFOs, for whatever reason, in my mailbox, I got pictures of this still movie that came out. And I'm not really sure why I got the pictures. Someone just sent them to me. And it was before this whole brouhaha started, before anybody had even seen the film. I had these pictures, and I really wasn't sure why they got sent to me. And the story was told about them. Somebody had written me this real brief letter about it. And I really didn't know much about it at the time, and then the whole brouhaha started with it.
Yeah.
Where a gentleman named Marie Santilli had claimed that he was here in the United States buying film, stock footage of Elvis Presley, because he was doing documentaries and selling them. And during this, he says that he found one gentleman who had footage of Elvis, who also showed him what he claimed was the autopsy of an alien that was recovered from a UFO crash in Roswell.
Yeah.
And the gentleman who was trying to sell him the film claimed that, oh, I was a cameraman for the Army. No one knows I've got this film. I'm getting old. You know, I could use some money.
Yeah.
And so Ray Santilli left and came back 2 years later and supposedly bought the film from this gentleman. And from there on out, it started, it was such a sensational piece of footage that a lot of people really thought that it was the real deal. The serious folks in the UFO field didn't buy it for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
A lot of people were decrying this film as an outright fraud, but no one could prove it. That was what the really interesting thing is, because generally, the folks that perpetrate these frauds and these hoaxes aren't too bright when it comes to covering their own tracks.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people started investigating this film. A lot of UFO personalities, and I call them UFO personalities because these are the people you either hear on late night radio quite a bit, or you see at conventions, or you hear their name all the time, or they publish a number of books or whatever else.
Yeah.
A lot of UFO personalities endorse this film as real, saying that, well, I have, you know, friends of mine who are, you know, or I have intelligence contacts within the government that say that this film's real or whatever else. And it went on and on and on, and it was the subject of a special that was broadcast on the Fox channel.
Yep.
Called Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction. And it was a ratings bonanza for the folks at Fox, and they made a ton of money on it. Well, in the same vein, Mr. Santilli made an awful lot of money off this thing, selling the rights to several TV companies throughout the world.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I always stuck to when this film came out was that Santilli never gave up a piece of that footage for an actual analysis to determine if it was real or not, in terms of when was it filmed, is the footage real, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Never did that. And that was one sticking point with me. When that happened, I said, forget it. I'm not going to give this film 5 more seconds of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I watched the special like everybody else because I was interested in it and wanted to see what it was about. Well, this last month, there was a program on the Sky One TV network in England where a gentleman, I forgot the gentleman's name, but his show is called Eamon Investigates.
Yeah.
And he interviewed Ray Santilli and a number of other people who claimed that they were in on this, and Santilli said that it was a hoax. Well, he didn't call it a hoax. He called it a reconstruction. He still claims that the footage he had was real, but by the time he had first contacted the cameraman and when he had finally gotten the film back in London, he said that 95% of it had oxidized and was ruined.
Yeah.
And that the remaining 5% of the film was in terrible condition. And so he decided to, quote-unquote, reconstruct it. And so they got a special effects guy, they molded an alien, they threw it on the table, and they claimed that they used a flat in London to film as a stage for this alien autopsy that they filmed,
yeah.
Where they had converted it and they'd bought antiques and had done some research on, well, would these tools be available and some of the techniques that surgeons use doing autopsies and whatever else.
Yeah.
And the guy who did the special effects for it, apparently he's a sculptor named John Humphreys, said that he used a sheep's brain for the brain and a lamb's leg for the leg joint. You might recall there was one leg on the alien that was all blown out that looked like it had been severely injured and was very charred and everything else, and
yeah.
That's what they used. And so now they've confessed to this whole thing, and now people are it's been a very weird reaction, because when they said, well, we used sheep's brains, a lot of people said, well, that doesn't look like a sheep's brain to me. There's something else going on here. And Santilli himself has said that in his quote-unquote reconstruction, he has actually inserted original frames from the surviving alien autopsy footage that he claims is real.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to tell the difference between the frames and what he's reconstructed.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd actually, on this program, he had actually shown some of the frames, but you really couldn't see what was on them.
Yeah.
But he said he had brought some to show the investigator. And so this isn't a coincidence, in my opinion, that Santilli did this. Because he just released a movie called Alien Autopsy, which is a comedy based on him supposedly acquiring the film and all the controversy that followed it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were really questioning his timing as to him coming forward and saying, oh, yeah, well, it was a hoax. Well, restoration, as he wants to call it.
Yeah, because the special made for a good promotional vehicle for his movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then, obviously, ufology is littered with these kind of stories, and controversial stories in general, really, where people take one side or the other, and you can run the gamut from Billy Meyer to MJ-12, Dolce Bases, and recently Dan Burrish. Is there any other controversial UFO story that that UFOWatchdog.com has, like, sunk its teeth into that you could tell me about that people might be interested in hearing about?
There was a case down in Brazil in 2003
mm-hmm.
Where a gentleman named, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right or not, is a Yurandir Oliveira. And Yurandir claimed that he was contacted telepathically by some ETs and transported from his bed up into a ship and flew off for a while and then returned. And some people are probably familiar with this because the evidence that he purportedly had were his bed sheets, where they had somehow, if you look at the bed sheets in this picture that's out there, there's an outline of a human body. There's a contour you can make out of a human body, and it looks like it's, you know, burned, and
yeah.
There's been some energy interaction or whatever else you want to call it, and some small stones. And there was a lot of controversy surrounding this case because the first time it got looked at by some scientists, they said there's nothing magical about the bed sheets. There's nothing we can't explain. And these stones that he claims fell from the sky when he was abducted are a common stone in that area, and they're also common here in the United States down in the Southwest, and they're called Moki marbles. And they're just rocks that have formed on their own. They're very round. And a lot of New Age kind of stores sell them down there in the desert and wherever else.
Yeah.
Well, what had happened was the person investigating the case didn't feel that the scientist did a good enough job, so that person went and got a second opinion. And it raised quite a stink in the UFO community. And what finally wound up happening was it fell off the face of the planet. No one heard anything else about the supposed evidence.
Yeah.
And some rocks were supposedly taken to some professors at a university back east, and they looked at the rocks and said, well, you know, we've never seen anything like this, but they're not extraterrestrial by any means. And I guess they really didn't get to finish their analysis because the investigator came back and pulled the rocks out, and that was kind of the end of it. And kind of the point I want to make is that, you know, we always hear about these great UFO, these supposedly great UFO cases, and we get the sensational half of the story, but we never get the other half of the story. What was the end result with a lot of this evidence and, you know, follow-up investigation and whatever else? We never really get to hear about that. So that's just one of many, 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 you know, cases that that are out there that you just kind of shake your head out and wonder, how did it get there? Why haven't we heard about this? Where's the follow-up, you know?
What's exactly.
What's going on with it? So you might have been hearing about a lot of that.
Yeah. You took the words right out of my mouth. You hear a lot of stories, and the stories always get to the investigation phase, and then you never hear about them again. And that seems to be a recurring theme in ufology. And one of the more interesting episodes that you've been involved with was an investigation of yours that sort of transcended just an investigation and became a story in and of itself, and you sort of became part of the story, and that was the infamous Sean David Morton investigation that eventually turned into a lawsuit. Now, I've heard a lot about this lawsuit via Sean David Morton and his various appearances on other radio programs, and I figured since we have you on the show, it would be a great opportunity to get the other side of the story on the Sean David Morton lawsuit. So why don't you tell us what you can about this story?
Back in 2001, early 2001, I published an investigation called The Shameless Psychic and His Prophecy of Lies. And it was about this gentleman named Sean Morton, who had made a number of claims on his website and through other avenues. And my investigation had revealed that a lot of these claims weren't all they were cracked up to be. Mm-hmm. And so I published a story. I'd asked him to respond several times, never got an answer from him. And so years later, I get sued. This guy filed a $1 million lawsuit against me, and I was surfing the web, and I found out my website was down, and I contacted my web host, and he told me, "Hey, Sean David Morton suing you." And I kind of had a chuckle because I thought he was joking with me.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. And I thought, okay, well, fine, we'll go ahead and deal with it. And so I got served with some papers and went through it, and I was lucky enough to retain a really good attorney who asked me to have a phone conference with her, and I had a phone conference, and she said, "Hey, send me all your proof." And so I fed extra a box of stuff, with copies of all my files in it. And she called me back and said, "Okay, fine, yeah, this looks good. I'll take this case." So she takes the case, and what happens is she files this motion where it's called a SLAP. It's a strategic lawsuit against public participation.
Yeah,
and I really felt that Mr. Morton filed this lawsuit to silence me because he didn't like what was going on. And if a guy's suing you for $1 million and says in his lawsuit that you're impacting him financially, well, you know. So anyway, it winds up going to a hearing, and I really felt that he was doing this just to keep me quiet. And I think he wanted my website and a bunch of the other things on there to go away.
Yeah.
So he said that everything on the website was false. So my lawyer responded saying, "It's not false, it's true. And if Mr. Morton wants to provide evidence that his claims have even a chance of being found to be true, then he needs to provide evidence that my client has said anything false about him."
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it came down to. I don't need, you know, to sit here and tell you a tale for a half an hour. It's very short and it's sweet. He was asked to prove his claims in court. All he had to do was prove that one single solitary claim that I made against him was false, and he would have won, and he didn't do it. And that's really what it came down to. And he was ordered to pay my legal fees, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
And so he's had chance after chance after chance to respond to all these claims. He's had, you know, a lawsuit. He tried to appeal it. He's had a number of years, his website, and a number of other avenues that he could have responded to it on. But I've invited him several times, and it's posted on my website that I'll either discuss this matter with him publicly if he wants to, or if he wants to provide proof of his claims, I'll be more than happy to publish on my website. It's really that simple, and that was pretty much it. And I think the most amusing thing about this is that This is a guy who claims that he's a psychic, but he kind of couldn't see the outcome of his own lawsuit. That's just priceless to me. I think that's just absolutely priceless.
Yeah.
So that really was the crux of the whole lawsuit. He said I was lying. He tried to sue me. I said prove it. He couldn't do it. And that's the end of it.
Yep. Yep. Well, I'm glad we got the opportunity to get your side of the story, and you know, and just to be fair, I'll extend the invitation to Sean David Morton to come on Ben All America Audio in response to the lawsuit story. If he wants to, you know, he can drop me a line and we'll bring him on the show to respond. Maybe someday we can get you guys head to head in some situation. It'd be really cool. But if Sean David Morton wants to be on Ben All America Audio to respond to the lawsuit, then he can come on the show.
And if Mr. Morton wants, I'll happily have a public conversation with him about it.
Hey, that would be fantastic. I'd love to host that. That would be killer. One of the things that I saw on the website that really amused me, and hopefully maybe you can expound on it a little more, you have sort of like Dirtbag of the Month, and the one that really made me laugh the most, I guess, was aliens. The aliens are the Dirtbag of the Month. For all the problems they've caused us and for the bizarre subculture they've spawned here on planet Earth. What about these dastardly aliens? I wish I share your opinion that I wish they would just show up and end this foolishness now so we can all move on and, you know, go on to the next level instead of playing hide-and-seek like five-year-olds.
Well, the aliens, whether they exist or not, if they exist, they're probably having a good laugh at our expense. Seriously. I mean, how would you feel if you saw all this kind of nonsense going on down here and you were, you know, a higher, more intelligent being, for let's say? I don't think I'd want to land here.
Exactly.
I think I'd be avoiding this planet. That's just me. Yeah, the whole bit about tying, you know, aliens into UFOs, and really UFOs in popular culture means aliens now. It doesn't mean what I'd gone back to earlier, that literal acronym where it's an unidentified flying object.
Yeah.
It means E.T., aliens, beings from space, Space Brother, you know, Space Brother, whatever you want to call them.
Exactly.
Whatever they're calling them now.
Yeah.
The Grays. And it's really true that I don't think that any other figure, aside from religious figures, I don't think any other figure has really dominated our society in terms of media and popular culture like the aliens have. It's really, really amazing. And I was at McMinnville this weekend at the UFO Fest. I did a presentation there. And Paul Davids was there. I'm not sure if you know who he is or not.
Yeah, he made the Roswell movie.
Right. And I'd met Paul a number of years ago, and we touched base. And we watched the parade together. And Paul brought up a really great point. He said that at a lot of parades, whether the UFO Festival parades or whether they're 4th of July parades.
Yeah.
And he focused on the 4th of July parades. He says, do you notice that you see more people dressed up like aliens than you do of Abe Lincoln or George Washington?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a great insight, because really our society, in terms of what we think about aliens and whatever, it's really kind of dominated by those images of the big eyes, big head, you know, kind of short little guys.
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed at how prominent that really is out there in books and movies and TV series and cable shows and everything else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things I learned that really opened my eyes a lot was something I'd heard from Stan Friedman, and that was that the classic typical image of the gray that nobody owns any trademark on, the gray alien. So you can literally put it on whatever you want, and you're never going to get in any trouble, and it's a pretty popular image. It's like Mickey Mouse, but without the trademark copy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, he's completely right. Yeah. And
so it's like,
yeah,
it's like you can the market can be completely oversaturated with gray aliens because no one owns gray aliens, so it helps.
Yeah, the dirtbag thing that I did on the aliens was kind of my my humorous look at the aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty funny anyway. Maybe someone else won't, but...
Well, I could get a good laugh out of it, so, you know, I'm sure most of the people do. When you really think about it, the aliens are the cause of all of this.
You have to laugh about a lot of this stuff. You really do, because
yeah.
the field's just... if you didn't, you'd just go nuts if you took it 125% seriously all the time.
Exactly, exactly. Like, that's one of the reasons, like I said at the beginning, that's one of the big influences on Banal of America that UFOWatchdog.com has had, is that we take everything with a grain of salt and we try to inject some humor into things because, you know, a lot of this cloak and dagger stuff is shadow and just for effect. You know, and if you see through that, you're kind of like, oh, you know, it's not really, it's not as spooky as it is after all or something.
Yeah.
Moving on to take it in a more positive light, at your website you also highlight what you call the Hall of Fame. And it's not, ufology is not just riddled with hoaxers and liars and snake oil salesmen and people trying to get your money. There's also a lot of great researchers out there. So who would you say gets the UFOWatchdog.com stamp of approval or the Hall of Fame notation, as you like to call it?
On a side note about this really quick, during my presentation this weekend at that festival in McMinnville, I have a slide that I use in my presentation where I show three UFO researchers who are heavily involved in the physical aspect of UFO investigation.
Yeah.
And I asked the audience to name, for anybody that can name these three people. Nobody could name them. Not one person could name all three people.
Yeah.
And I had Nancy Talbot from the BLT research team, and Ted Oliphant, who was best known for his cattle mutilation investigations back in Alabama when he was a police officer.
Yeah.
And then I had Ted Phillips, who has worked for years and years and years gathering physical trace case evidence and having it analyzed. And not one person could name any of those people. I was amazed. One person kind of knew who Nancy Talbot was, but didn't know her name.
Yeah.
Said, "Oh, that's the crop circle lady." That's what they referred to her as. Well, if you go to my Hall of Shame for people that I really feel are doing a lot of discredit to this field, if you look in that, people readily will recognize those names.
Yeah.
If you go to the Hall of Fame, there are a few names that people will likely recognize, but not a lot. And that really tells you where UFOs are at in terms of who people look to get their information.
Yeah.
They go to the UFO personalities, not the investigators.
Yeah.
And the Hall of Fame, I've got quite a few people in there. And I think a lot of people don't know that I have a Hall of Fame. They think I'm just out there to cap on every single person that's in this field, and that's entirely not true.
Exactly, yeah.
In the Hall of Fame, I've got J. Allen Hynek, of course, and Nancy Talbot. I've done some work with Nancy, and she's just a super, super sharp lady and really likes science, likes to apply science to the field.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I've got Stan Friedman. I disagree with some stuff that Stan has to say, but I like Stan. I think he does a pretty good job. Another gentleman, I have Richard Hall. He's written several books on UFOs, and he was a NICAP investigator. And his UFO evidence books are just fabulous. I've got a lot of people in here, and I would just ask anybody who's going to my website to go ahead and take a visit. Just go ahead and take a spin around through there and see some of these folks who I really feel have done a lot of credit to the field. Peter Robbins, I've got him in there, and you've interviewed Peter, haven't you?
Yeah, Peter's a great guy.
Right. Yeah, he sure is. He sure is a wonderful man.
Yeah.
Very nice guy. And so if you just take a cruise through there, I've got it. I've got a little bit of everybody in there. Somebody wrote me, I've got Cal Korf in there, and a lot of people think that Cal's this big, you know, government-sponsored UFO debunker, and he really isn't. Cal's just, he just needs a lot of convincing. he really does. And just take a spin through there and see who's in there.
Yeah.
And these are a lot of people that probably most folks don't know about.
And their research is solid, and it's good, and it's worth checking out. And a lot of times, if you check out some of these people, like you said, in the Hall of Shame, a lot of their stuff doesn't go anywhere. And you're kind of like we said, at the investigating stage, sort of.
Right. You know, where's the evidence at? That's what I really like. I like things that you can send to people who know much more than I do, that you can send them things that they can analyze. And I just like solid stuff. I'm a physical evidence kind of guy. I always have been and always will be.
Yeah. And then to sort of take it to a contemporary level, in a sense, the big news of the last 6 months has been Serpo. I'm sure you've heard of Serpo. I'm sure you're watching it just like the rest of us are. Everyone's sort of watching Serpo to see what's going to happen. Will it fall into the Dr. Reed alien autopsy level of hoaxery, or will it turn out to be something more than that? Who knows? What's your opinion on Serpo as it's unfolded so far?
I'll keep it really short and sweet. Until I see some proof, I'm not going to believe a word they're saying. And it goes back to my conspiracy end on that, is how do you prove that?
Yeah.
How do you prove a conspiracy if no one wants you to prove it? You don't. And it's just one of those stories. It's a fascinating story, you know, if you really think about it. Even in terms of science fiction, it's a good story.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm concerned, until there is some proof, because when you start getting anonymous sources and this and that, and you don't have anything to back the story up with, I'm going to stay away from it. I'm not going to touch it, and I'm not going to pay any attention until that stuff shows up.
Yeah. But where do you think the Serpo story will go in the long run? Do you have an opinion on, like, how you think it, what direction it'll go at all?
It's really taken on a life of its own on the internet.
Yeah.
And if it keeps going where it's going nowhere.
What do you mean by that?
Story after story after story, posting after posting after posting with nothing to back anything up with. I'm not a big fan of it at all.
Yeah. And you think if they just keep rolling out these stories that people are going to yawn eventually and sort of go away?
Yeah, exactly. People aren't going to pay you any attention. I think we're kind of in an age where people are starting to question things quite a bit more than they ever have.
Yeah.
And people are really turning into, you know, show me the evidence. Where's the proof?
Yeah. Okay, and also you have one section on your thing about conferences, and you said you recently spoke at the 7th Annual UFO Fest, and I think you said McMinnville?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in McMinnville, Oregon. Why don't you just give me your thoughts on that? You were pretty down on conferences, like you said. Has that sort of changed your opinion? Were you happy with the way that one went? You know, your thoughts on conferences in general and your recent appearance. You don't usually do appearances at conferences, right? So
I've turned down some speaking invitations in the past, and I've had a personal policy for a number of years that I don't do UFO conventions or conferences. I just don't, because of the experiences that I had with the two that I did go to. I didn't like it. It was very contrived and very sensationalized, and there was a lot of nonsense floating around, and I just didn't want to have any part of it because I thought it was very, very uncredible, and that it was very, it had a very negative effect on a lot of the solid cases and the solid body of UFO evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just said, no way. So in hell, I'm doing one of these things. And a couple of weeks ago, I got a call from a guy who runs this UFO Fest in McMinnville, Oregon. And he said that somebody had recommended me as a speaker there. And he asked me if I would be interested. And I said, thanks, but no thanks. I just didn't even mince words with the guy. I said, no, I'm not doing it. Here's my policy, and here's why.
Yeah.
And the guy said, could I take, 10 minutes of your time real quick? And I said, well, sure. I mean, you've gone through the trouble of calling me. And he just explained to me, he said, look, I understand your aversion to these things. And, I've read your website, and I can understand that. And we have a very serious site that we offer, and we try to offer the most credible speakers we can find and people that we feel are credible. We avoid, the kind of kookery that goes along with the UFO scene.
Yeah.
And on the other side, too, we have kind of this lighthearted affair. There's this lighthearted side of it that we do with the UFO parade, and we do a reenactment of War of the Worlds on stage and a bunch of other stuff. And he says, I won't tell you that we're completely serious, but we are serious about having, trying to present the most credible speakers that we can.
Yeah, pretty disciplined.
Right. And so I listened to the guy, and he seemed like he was pretty sincere. And I said, let me think about it and I'll get back to you. So I thought about it, and I talked to a couple of people that I know and who have done the UFO, have done the UFO speaker circuit, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they really highly recommended it. And so I thought, okay, fine, I'll go do it. why not? So I called the guy back, and I went and did it. And I got up there after, it's a long story. And the trip was horrible. I got bad directions the whole time, and just, it was just, I was exhausted. I didn't have much sleep the night before when I left, and got up there, and I had a really good time. It was very well done. I thought it was very tasteful, the way that they presented everything. And the whole event, the whole festival centers around the Paul Trent 1950 UFO sighting and subsequent photographs of that sighting. And they had the guy, they had a guy there who had filmed a documentary on the Trent case, and they'd screened that, and it's a very good documentary. It's very well done. And I can't remember the name of the gentleman who filmed it, but he did an excellent job with it. And I had a great time. I even went to the damn UFO parade. I couldn't believe I'd done that. And I met a lot of really nice people up there. And I dare to say that I would do that again. I would probably go back to that festival if I was ever invited back, definitely. And the lectures were very well attended, and there were a number. And at first, when I went there, I thought I didn't know what to expect. I kind of thought, well, you know, maybe I'm going to be viewed as the bad guy there. And I got up there to do my presentation, and everything went wrong with that damn presentation that could possibly have gone wrong. Because I generally don't do public speaking. I just don't. It's just not my thing. Some people are really good at it. I'm not. I'll be frank about it. And so my presentation, I had a PowerPoint presentation that I was doing, and they loaded up the presentation, and it wasn't working. It wouldn't come up on the screen.
Oh, man.
And I was really relying on some notes and some other things, and so I kind of had to ad lib there, and the audience and I had a good laugh over this thing not working. And once it finally got rolling and stuff, I think I did okay. And it was a good time. I had a really good time over there, and the people were very – it was really well received. I really didn't think it was going to be. I thought, these people aren't going to like me at all because I'm pretty blunt when I'm talking about things, and I'm very direct.
Yeah.
But it was really well received. So that whole experience has kind of changed my viewpoint of the conference scene. The other thing, too, is that these conferences, and it's kind of sad, especially with the big ones, because they do a lot of the sensationalistic crap, and it's the only real public venue on any large scale, besides doing radio or TV, that researchers, serious, legitimate researchers, can go and present their evidence and their findings.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really, really sad that it comes down to that. And what I noticed that the conferences that I went to long ago was that the people who were presenting the more sensationalistic, outlandish material had more people in their workshops than the people who were serious, legitimate, hands-on investigators.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that too.
And a lot of it revolved around money and making deals and this and that. And, you know, I'm not into any of that. I just like people to get the information and be done with it. So
that's cool.
And another thing was I ran into a lot of people down there. It was the first place that I ran into Sean David Morton, and I tried to ask him some questions, and when I started asking some pointed questions about some things, he just didn't have time, turned around in the middle of our conversation and walked off. And that happened to me quite a bit down there. Quite a few people did that. And some people were just saying just some nonsensical garbage. One guy had told me that the stars in the sky were giant UFO motherships. And I kind of rolled my eyes, and I said, okay, what's your proof of that?
Yeah.
He said, my proof is that the stars move in the sky at night. And I said, you don't think that has anything to do with the rotation of the planets or, you know, when you hear stuff like that, it's really, you know, your eyebrows go up. And after that, I just really didn't want to have any part of them at all, ever. And I just had a very good time at this UFO conference, and I thought it was done and done very respectfully and in good taste.
That's great. That's great. So what's next for Royce Meyer and UFOWatchdog.com? Are you working on any key investigations right now?
I don't have anything going, and for my real life has taken a lot of my time with my job and my family and some other things that I have going. And I'll just, you know, we'll see what comes up next. There is a case I want to go down and investigate down on the coast that somebody had sent me that happened a number of years ago, and I don't want to go into too many details about it because I haven't done the investigation. So when that happens, maybe I can check back in with you.
Nice. And now I know you're down on books and conferences and stuff, but have you ever considered putting out a book at all? Because it sounds like your investigations and some of these adventures that you found yourself in would be an interesting book. Have you ever considered that?
I almost started writing a book about the whole Jonathan Reed case, because there was just so much there that a lot of people still don't know about, and I just kind of shied away from the idea.
Yeah.
I just did. I don't want to be accused of doing the same thing that I've been against all this time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to kick myself in the ass, so to speak. And
yeah. I know what you mean.
So no, I really haven't considered doing it. You know, maybe one of these days, if I am inspired enough to write a book or feel that it's time to write a book, I'll probably do some kind of charity deal where the proceeds go to charity, and you know, who knows?
Yeah. You know, maybe like the worst UFO hoaxes ever, and the proceeds can go to actual UFO investigations that are, like, legit.
Yeah, right.
We can dream, can't we?
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much for being on the show, Royce. Like you said, like we covered a lot of great topics here in the interview, you know, people in the ufology field, a lot of times they're told what they want to hear, and a lot of times they don't want to be told that they've been fooled or that they've been bamboozled or that maybe somebody's been lying to them, but sometimes that's the case. And you do an amazing amount of great work rooting out these people that are trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the serious investigators and the lay people in the field of ufology. So, like you said, Better Business Bureau of Ufology, we've needed somebody like this for a long time. I highly appreciate your work. And like I said, you've been a big inspiration to BenAllOfAmerica.com, so I was more than happy to have you on the show and to hopefully bring more people to UFOWatchdog.com and give them a chance to understand what you do and what your website's all about. Thanks for being on the show.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
That does it for this week's edition of Been All of America Audio. I want to thank Royce Myers for stopping by. The website, of course, UFOWatchdog.com. Check it out. Also want to thank Leslie, Chiron, and R. Lee for your help and support with the audio series and with the website. If you haven't checked out their columns, please do so. Leslie's on Tuesday, Chiron on Wednesday, R. Lee every other Monday or so. That's at BenAllOfAmerica.com, plus tons more satirical pictures that you're just going to laugh out loud at if you see them. The weekly BenAllOfAmerica.com mothership, the Benall Report, that comes out on Friday evenings. And just tons more. Check out BenAllOfAmerica.com. We update twice a day, sometimes three times a day. You never know what's going on with us. And if you're a longtime listener of Been All of America Audio, please feel free to click the PayPal button, make a donation, help us out, help offset the costs of the audio series. We would greatly appreciate it, and it would really go a long way to keeping the show on the road. Next week, the guest is to be announced. I'm playing a serious game of phone tag here with this guy. I got two more guests lined up for Been All of America Audio Season 1. We're in the final countdown here. The last episode, of course, will be the season finale of Season 1. Then we'll be taking the summer off, and we'll be rocking and rolling at you in September with Been All of America Audio Season 2. But for now, next week, to be announced, we'll let you know what's going on at the website. Until you hear from me again, folks, thanks for listening. This is Tim Benall, signing off.